in the spring and summer of 1976, I spent most of my time commuting between Chicago and Minneapolis to first locate a suitable temple. Minneapolis, St. Paul was really much bigger. They were twin cities, so there were two of them side by side, and they were much larger than Winnipeg. And for that, they were also much wealthier. I managed to locate almost right downtown a very suitable building, which the landlord, who was a owner of quite a bit of real estate, was willing to renovate for us. As time went on, he became very favorable to Krishna consciousness, and he would come over on a daily basis, and we would talk. His offices were just down the street. My desire was to make the building completely suitable for the deities, for preaching, and ideal accommodations for brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and that's exactly what did happen. Over the period of a few months, the building was just refurnished and redesigned as we wanted it. And so sometime in the summer of 1976, which would have been exactly 30 years ago now, deities, devotees moved from Chicago to Minneapolis, and we began our preaching over there. This was my first efforts at beginning Krishna consciousness in a place where it wasn't. And it was also the first building or first property which I acquired on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON. There was an interesting phenomenon going on at this time in Chicago. One woman and her son, joined Krishna consciousness, but her husband remained not only unfavorable, but very antagonistic to ISKCON. In fact, he was so antagonistic that in order to get the child to come back and live with the father, he arranged for systematic picketing of the Sankirtan devotees at O'Hare. By that I mean that as many Sankirtan devotees as were there at the airport, people would accompany these devotees. They would shadow them, and as soon as they approached someone to sell a book, they would say, "Don't buy a book. These people are a cult. They're just brainwashed. They're trying to cheat you." So needless to say, that made book distribution more or less impossible. And it was a standoff, because for us to leave the airport would have been an admission of defeat, to speak of something that the airport authorities would have really liked. On the other hand, staying at the airport was torture for devotees. It was already difficult enough selling books at Chicago Airport O'Hare, something that I'll talk about a little later. But when you have someone over your shoulder telling everyone that you approach, "Don't buy the book," that becomes a real mental strain, and the devotees were under great strain. So our Canadian devotees were very happy when they had the opportunity to move to Minneapolis. Minneapolis also had an international airport, and that airport had been legally opened so that we could distribute books there, as well as other places such as downtown, which, amazingly enough, was heated. The pavement had, just like here in Europe you have underfloor heating, in Minneapolis the main street had under pavement heating, so that in the winter time we would be out there in a light sweater standing on the street, because it was more or less like spring even in the midst of snowfall. And as we began doing Harinam and book distribution in Minneapolis, we attracted the attention of many people. Devotees would bring guests back on a daily basis. Our Sunday program was packed. We would do regular types of preaching, but we also attracted the attention of a certain Christian group who really didn't want us in Minneapolis. In fact, they wanted us to move on. So somehow or another, they also caught on to the harassment that devotees were suffering in Chicago, and which I think by the fall of 76 had stopped, because the person who wanted his son back actually did get his son back. Interestingly enough, it took the temple president to contact Srila Prabhupada directly to explain the situation in order that the boy was returned to his father, and the individuals who were shadowing the devotees at the airport were called off. Anyway, in Minneapolis, this Christian group got the same idea, and so in the beginning of 1977, they also started to harass us in this way, and that made things very difficult for devotees, obviously. And this type of harassment continued on for quite some months until these people, particularly the main proponent of this campaign to rid Minneapolis of the Hare Krishnas, was confronted in a public debate, and then after that they just disappeared and stopped. Let me just go back to 1976 again, because that was also the first time that I came to India. I came to visit Mayapur, I came to visit Vrindavan Dham, and from there still returned to Winnipeg, and it was the first time that I personally met Srila Prabhupada. Such a determination to rid devotees of a city. And I lamented at seeing the devotees in such a situation. And I was under constant strain and constant pressure from the Christian group, from the media. And it was actually the first time that this whole concept of being a cult, being a sect, was also levied at ISKCON. This was previous to the whole Jonestown incident, which came the following year. And in order to be educated in how to react and deal with these types of accusations, that we weren't a bona fide religion, that we were simply brainwashed, that we were a destructive cult who were stealing children from their parents, from society, I began to communicate with Mukunda Maharaj, who was in Los Angeles and who was head of communication. And on a regular basis, he would answer questions for me, and I would bring up the questions that I would be charged with or asked by media and the devotees who would be shadowed at the airport by people saying they're brainwashed. Don't give money to them, they're a cult. And Mukunda Maharaj would give answers which I first wrote down and then gradually remembered and ultimately began to logically assess and understand as a preaching necessity of the day. This was no small time attack. In fact, when a husband and wife couple who I'd known earlier moved to Minneapolis, the lady devotee was actually kidnapped by these people for almost 2 weeks. That was a real mistake on their part. They literally tried to deprogram her. And, of course, that was a very serious legal transgression. And between that and what I mentioned earlier, this public debate, they realized that they had to step back, for they had really broken the law, and the consequence of that would be is going to jail. And although I never had problems with eating before this, I never had problems with sleeping, now I learned what it meant to be an anxiety on behalf of Krishna. In the late spring of 1977, Satsarup Maharaj, who was the GBC, made a very interesting or unusual proposal to us at the time. He suggested that the devotees from Minneapolis move to Chicago. Chicago Temple, whose temple president I mentioned was Rama Shloka Prabhu, wasn't doing so well. And they thought that if the devotees from Minneapolis, about perhaps 16 or 20 of us, moved there, that would really give the Chicago Temple, which was understandably a much more important city, a real boost in the arm. To make a long story short, we ultimately agreed with that proposal, and what happened was that what was the Radha Damodar BBT Sankirtan party took over Minneapolis temple as the training ground where they would train new devotees. And they stayed there. Unfortunately, they didn't stay there for more than a year. And then they abandoned the city. In fact, I don't even think that to the present day there's much going on in Minneapolis, which is unfortunate because we fought a battle there, won, and it was a good place to make devotees and preach, what to speak of, distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. Chicago was a very big temple. We had rented an old YMCA in Evanston, which was in North Chicago, and was situated at a 30-minute drive from O'Hare Airport. It was a big temple with a big temple room. Kishore Kishori were the presiding deities. Lord Jagannath was there, and now we brought big Gornitai. And for me, the best part of the arrangement was that I could go out and be a full-time book distributor again. The problems at the airport had ended, and distributing books in O'Hare was like a dream come true. I always wanted to just distribute books at airports, air-conditioned in the summer, heated in the winter. It was the busiest airport in the world. That meant that there was almost a constant stream of people who were coming, and people were well-off, receptive, and over and above that, we were still very young. 1977 means 30 years ago, means I was 27 years old at the time, 28. So I was strong enough to be able to carry around 20 Maha Big Books a day in my arms. That was our practice. We would always keep fully stocked up with books. As many books as we sold, we always kept getting more. And there were unlimited ecstatic experiences at the airport, which is something that I should describe at another time because I'll get very much sidetracked. But this was a relief in the anxiety that I was speaking about on accepting on behalf of Krishna. And once again, I was just swimming in the ocean of Sankirtan of book distribution. And there were many devotees who were there in Chicago who were wonderful book distributors. There were devotees who would come from the BBT book distribution party and distribute there. Systematically, I was taught, trained how to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books until we would be doing a general average of about 60 to 100, what we call now Mahabig books a day. At that time, I think we just called them big books. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, it was wonderful. We would be at the airport by 9 a.m. in the morning, no later than 9 a.m., because that was the first quote-unquote rush. And we would stay usually until 5:30, later 6 o'clock, and come home for the evening program. Of course, at marathons, we'd leave earlier, sometimes right after Mangal Arati, and stay until 9:10 at night. And it was a wonderful place. Srila Prabhupada called it O Hare Krishna Airport. In fact, he even asked one of our devotees to go to the airport authorities and have them rename the airport, O Hare Krishna Airport. Once again, in 77, I went to India. I was still in Minneapolis at that time. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada got sick. And Prabhupada never really recovered from then on. Rather, he was constantly sick. And we were always hearing the news of Srila Prabhupada's illness. That was anxiety. That was ongoing anxiety over Srila Prabhupada's health. Although our mood and naivety was that whatever condition Srila Prabhupada was in, he was a pure devotee, and he would continue on with us forever. And the best thing that we could do for Srila Prabhupada's health was to distribute books, because we knew that every week Srila Prabhupada would look at the Sankirtan newsletter and we would hear the devotees' names. And that relationship, that Srila Prabhupada would hear the number of books distributed, the total numbers of books distributed by temples, by countries, was what continually enthused us. And this wonderful spirit of Sankirtan went from late spring of 1977, maybe May, when we moved there, to June, July, August, September, October, 5-6 months. It was one of the happiest times of my Krishna consciousness until mid-October, when one day, as I was preparing to go out on Sankirtan, the Udhamashloka called me into his office, and then we heard the news that Srila Prabhupada had left the world. And that was the major turning point in my life, the life of all of ISKCON's members. It was a major turning point for ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada was no longer with us. And I spent 3 days just sitting and trying to evaluate just exactly what that meant, that Srila Prabhupada had left this world. Devotees talked amongst themselves. We held morning programs and gave class, but we couldn't really quite function the way we'd functioned up until that time. And for many devotees, it was a real turning point in their spiritual life, in that living in a world without Srila Prabhupada, having only Srila Prabhupada's vani, no longer his vapu, was inconceivable for some devotees, and therefore a good number of devotees left the Krishna consciousness movement as a consequence of that. There would be other reasons later on why that took place, but this was a very major factor. It was a major factor while many things happened to ISKCON which perhaps wouldn't have happened in Srila Prabhupada's presence. because Srila Prabhupada, among so many other things, was the one absolute authority that more or less everyone, it would be idealistic and untrue to say that everyone followed Srila Prabhupada's instructions, but he was unarguably the authority, and ultimately he wielded the clout to correct all deviations, to correct all deviants, to give the final siddhanta on any argument, to give the direction in which preaching should go, to stop some kind of inappropriate behavior on the part of individuals or yatras, and all of a sudden that was gone and we weren't prepared for it. Srila Prabhupada had long since established the GBC, but the GBC was always functioning under Srila Prabhupada's watchful eye. That supervision was no longer there. And this was the greatest anxiety that I had experienced, Srila Prabhupada's departure, and it was an anxiety that we've gone to live with now, gotten used to, almost 30 years. And it was an anxiety that we accepted on behalf of Krishna, on behalf of spreading Krishna consciousness, because as much as Srila Prabhupada could do whatever he wanted and could have stayed with us longer, but obviously he could not stay forever. Ultimately, the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement and ISKCON had to grow up and learn how to function with allegiance to his instructions and not dependent on his personal presence. And that's where we are at the present time, serving Krishna's Vani, serving Srila Prabhupada's Vani, excuse me, and living in a world where Srila Prabhupada is no longer physically present. I'll continue with that theme tomorrow.